This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
Mark Kermode is here. Well, he's sitting at the back of the commentary box. Thanks for all the emails about Cropperty. Thanks for the emails about the current movie releases. This one, as Mark ambles, trudges, actually, to the...
Commentary position. It's a very cramped commentary box.
Well, it is, because it's crammed full of cricketing and commentary talent. Peter Fincham, who I imagine is not the Peter Fincham who's the controller of ITV and former controller of BBC One, emails to say, fantastic at the Cropperty Festival. Enjoyed it very much, great for all our family, and I feel slightly cheated that I didn't get to finish hearing Mark's explanation as to why the gratuitous sex scene in open water was not in fact gratuitous. After the Dodge Brothers' excellent set on Friday evening, I queued to have the discussion with him, armed with my CD of the new album and my five-month-old daughter. Graciously, Mark posed for the mandatory baby shot while trying to justify his wrong views on the rubbishy diving film which exercised my wife and I a few years back. If he gets the chance, I'd love to hear his full attempt to change my view that the film was utter tosh.
Shall I finish the explanation of why that scene isn't gratuitous?
I'll do it very briefly.
Because the point is, the whole of the film is about two people cast adrift in the ocean, and the question isn't whether or not the shark will eat them. The question is whether or not they will bicker themselves to pieces before terrible. And in order for that to happen, you have to establish that they have a relationship at the beginning. And so, therefore, it is one of those rare occasions. I think the film has some faults, but that's not one of them. I think it's one of those rare occasions in which a sex scene in a film is narrative rather than non-narrative.
Chris Knight, at Cropperty last Saturday, Dr. K was kind enough to sign a Dodge Brothers CD and write a birthday card for my friend Laura Newport, whose birthday it was yesterday. Suffice to say, she was delighted with three E's when she received the unexpected gifts. Might I crave your indulgence in, for 1 week only, saying hello to her on the programme and wishing her a happy birthday? She's a regular listener, has already been using Facebook to its full potential to boast of the good doctor's personal touch.
What's her name? Laura?
Yes, indeed.
Laura Newport. Happy birthday to you, Laura. Well, I've just done it anyway.
Anything. The photographs from
I'm
the
more of a tart than you are.
Which is going some. And I'm more of a tart than Pat Murphy. Which, you know, so there's a bunch of tarts up in this box. What is the collective noun for tarts?
I think it's probably a gaggle of tarts.
Lots of photos, by the way, of the Cropperty Festival, and also Mark's review of Inglourious. Because we're allowed... is the normal situation still there, which we established last week, that you're allowed to say the title once properly? Is that per show?
Well, I don't know. I didn't put it in motion.
Yeah, apparently it is. Apparently that's right.
Okay, so what do you want to save it up to, like, let's do it at 5:30 or not? No, have we done it already?
No, that's fine. So we're allowed one proper one.
Yes.
And then the rest we use Inglourious
Custard. No, but my feeling about it is that since Quentin's lot have decided that they're not going to use the second word on the advertising, we shouldn't either. We should just go along with him and call it Inglourious.
There's lots of correspondence, which we'll get to after 3:00, and I was mentioning to Richard earlier, nearly a wicket, very close, that last night I took my son to see Inglourious. And it was an 18 certificate.
Yes. Was it the first 18 you've been to see with him?
Yes, absolutely.
Very good.
He went to see Bruno on his 18th birthday because it's an 18th certificate.
Yeah. Well, there is also a 15th certificate. Version.
How many? Maybe it's a common occurrence to go with your son to see an 18th certificate movie. I would never have done that with my dad. I can't imagine.
No, I don't think that. I remember very clearly my dad got me in to see a AA certificate movie when I was 12. He took me because the reason I have an obsession with Nixon is because something my father said. But my dad took me to see All the President's Men. And I was 12, and you had to be 14 to get in. And the woman behind the counter said, is he 14? And my father just gestured towards me, and she went, fine. So he thought that somehow he had managed to get me without actually lying, which is very sneaky.
So there was something in the gesture.
The gesture sort of went...
What does he look like?
Well, of course, I look like an 11-year-old. But my great way of getting into 14 certificate movies, AA movies, when I was younger than that, was to wear a cravat, which I always believed made you look older. So I would turn up to things wearing a denim jacket, you know, a pair of jeans, and a cravat.
There's one moment, and we'll get more Inglourious conversation after 3:00, very excited to hear the original Cat People by David Bowie coming up halfway through the soundtrack, which was always the best version from the movie Cat People originally.
Yeah, I thought that was the lamest bit of the film. I thought I know a couple of people have disagreed with me. I think that's the moment in which you go, that is not Stuck in the Middle with You. That is not, you know, You'll Be a Woman Soon. That is not any, that's not Across the 110th Street. It's a good song, but it was totally misused in that film.
So After School, Dance Flicker, Love You, Beth Cooper, Shorts, and maybe some Inglourious and some Time Travellers conversation as well. The collective noun for tarts, according to Pete in Leeds, is a doily.
A doily of tarts.
A doily of tarts. That sounds good.
A Gilbert and Sullivan of.
Keith from Worksop, it's a stickiness of tarts, a tray of tarts. Anyway, we've had a whole lot suggested. So I told you about the movies that are coming up. Let's do a box office top 10. At number 10, A Perfect Getaway.
Which I thought was the film of last week, and I, a couple of people emailed in saying, how dare you possibly say that's better than Inglourious? But it is, because it is what it is. It's a B-movie, and it looks like a B-movie. It's done by, Tui, who I think is quite an interesting guy, and it's perfectly fine. I mean, it's nothing you haven't seen before, but it's well done and efficiently executed.
Have you managed to catch up on everything that you've
almost nothing at all. So this is going to be lots of passes in this
you
top 10.
You did promise last week to have caught up by this time.
Yeah, but there's been an awful lot out this week.
Oh, right, so very good. So maybe there'll be this whole bunch of movies that you'll never, ever get to see.
Well, certainly in the case of G.I. Joe, I mean, I do have to see that at some point, but I'm not looking forward to it.
The Proposal, is it 9?
Which, more of the same, and we've gone round this particular Melbourne Bridge several times, but I am still of the opinion that at some point Sandra Bullock will make a better movie. I just don't know when.
Ice Age 3, Dawn of the Dinosaurs at number 8. Tom in Gothenburg saying, dear Burke and Wills, enjoyed last week's Ice Age 3 reviews by the respective offspring from the Mayo and Kermode clans. Proof that the apple does not fall far from the tree, indeed.
Yeah, I know.
In which you were exposed as making your son lie on air to suit your argument.
Yeah, I felt very, very uncomfortable about the fact that you brought that up. I think that what he was actually doing was speaking from the heart. It just may have taken a little bit of prodding, but somebody put on one of the message board that my son is now their new favourite film critic. I think simply because he disagreed with me and was stroppy.
Band Slam at number 7.
Which I liked. I liked more than I expected to like it. David Bowie is... what are we saying nowadays? Are we saying Bowie or Bowie or Bowie? What
David
do you
Bowie,
do?
David Bowie.
David Bowie, fun. Is involved in it and makes a very brief cameo appearance. And it looks like it could be complete rubbish, but it turns out to be better than you think, although it clearly isn't a patch on School of Rock, to which it owes an awful lot.
The Ugly Truth is at number 6.
Which I am pleased to say I was away. I've seen the posters. Very good. Review the posters.
No, G.I.
People with hearts.
G.I. Joe, The Rise of the Cobra at 5, which you intend to see at some stage in the future. Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince is hanging on in there at number 4, as you would imagine during the summer.
Yeah, I mean, I still think, and I'm standing by this, that it is the second best of all of them. I, funnily enough, an awful lot of people have said to me that the reason that Harry is not paralysed during the unfortunate event or the unhappy event is that it does therefore become a quasi-religious question of choice, which I think was the thing that was first put forward by a man of the cloth on this programme.
Yes.
And the more I think about it, the more I think that that actually might be the truth. Your feelings?
I think it doesn't work. I think that's far too profound. I think the whole thing is he's supposed to be stupefied. That is a far more coherent
reason. He may be stupefied internally rather than stupefied externally.
Well, has
by
he been stupefied internally by any of the other
No, incidents? He hasn't, but there's an interesting question about the moment that he does what Snape tells him to do, because the one thing that Dumbledore had told him to do is to trust Snape. And I wonder whether it becomes a kind of... It's like that thing God said to Abraham, go kill me a son. You know, it's like the beginning of that. It's a, I don't. You're doing it because somebody who you trust tells you that that's the thing to do.
G-Force at number 3.
Which I think is fine. I didn't see it in 3D, and I'm kind of pleased I didn't see it in 3D. It was perfectly fine in 2D.
Aliens in the Attic at number 2.
Which is all right. It's not enough. There's not enough of Ashley Tisdale, for one thing. I mean, it's an and Ashley Tisdale performance, and I could have done with an awful lot more of her. It's very forgettable, but it's perfectly fine.
And James in Bristol on this communication, Mark. After a screening of Time Traveller's Wife, I felt compelled to get involved with a conversation with a woman in the row in front of me. She was telling her boyfriend in no uncertain terms that the filmmakers had ruined the book by, among other things, dropping certain characters, losing and condensing some subplots, skipping whole passages of time, changing the ending. I told her that I completely disagreed. Scriptwriter Bruce Joel Rubin has made a terrific job of adapting the novel. After all, a screen adaptation should not slavishly preserve every detail and nuance. The time traveler's wife bucked this trend and found within the original story a cinematic arch to do justice to a fantastic book. Can someone tell Mark his review was also flawed? I feel, James, that's my job. There is no logical inconsistency to the narrative. Henry didn't recognize Claire in the library because at that point in his life, he had never traveled forwards in time to see her. It is only after he meets her that he starts to do this. It seemed obvious to me.
Okay, I think at some point in the script, if that's the case, as I said, this was probably explained in the book, the fact that he only travels forward in time after he's met her is never explained in the film. It may be explained in the book, it isn't. I think Bruce Joel Rubin is a very interesting screenwriter. You look at his previous work, obviously he has experience in this area. And I thought I gave a generally positive review of it, saying that it's impossible to turn that book into a perfect film because there are so many head-scratching problems with it, but I think that they had a fairly reasonable job. But certainly from my viewing of it, it was never made clear that he could not travel forward until after he'd met the girl, and that was a problem, and that is that I think is a problem.
Ted Blades in St. John's in Newfoundland, talking about the fact that we both said last week you hadn't read the book. He has yet to see the movies. But I can tell you that within the pages of Ms. Niffenegger's excellent book, this is perfectly logical.
Yeah.
Henry doesn't begin to travel back into Claire's past until after he meets her in real time.
Yes.
And most importantly, he has no control of when he travels or when and where he lands. His chronological disease is akin to leprosy, an affliction over which he has little control.
Yep.
As for the missing L in Traveller, it gets left behind like his clothes when he travels in time. Here in Canada, we'd use two L's, but the American spell check on my emails claims it's unnecessary.
Yeah, no, I mean, but, you know, points well made. Certainly, I think that is apparent from the book. That is not apparent from the film. If you see the film knowing that, it's slightly different. I also think in terms of any book adaptation, if you've read the book and you see the film, obviously you're going to be aware of the stuff which is left out. I mean, for example, it's only the recent Potters that I've seen since reading the books, and I have for the first time had that experience that everyone else has had of why did they do that, why did they change that, why did they leave that out? The answer is they are different mediums, but that wasn't made clear in the film.
So let's see. Can we squeeze a movie in, Mark, before 3:30?
We can. I mean, I think we should do Dance Flick. We don't need a clip from it, and I can do that in 3 minutes. Do you want me to do it?
I think you should do anything you can.
Okay, Dance Flick, the new, in inverted commas, comedy movie from the Wayans brothers. Let me just read you the credits.
I've seen this trailer. This is like the scary movie.
Yeah, scary. Okay, the Wayans are actually, I think, the most popular filmmaking dynasty currently working. Here are the credits for Dance Flick. It is a Wayans Brothers production starring Damon Wayans Jr., Craig Wayans. The film is directed by Damien Wayans and written by Keenan Ivory Wayans and Sean Wayans and Marlon Wayans and Craig Wayans and Damien Dante Wayans. The film is produced by Keenan Ivory Wayans, Sean Wayans, Marlon Wayans and Rick Alvarez.
Right.
And the music is by Dwayne Wayans. So essentially it is a Wayans Brothers movie, as you can probably tell. We are now into the next generation of Wayans. I mean, they gave us a whole bunch of very, very unfunny spoofs. They began, of course, long before that, but they started making the scary movies, which was sort of a pastiche of the Scream movies, which were already a sort of postmodern pastiche of slasher movies. And the thing that they seem to specialise in is taking things which are already funny and then saying, oh, look, aren't they funny? And here, in print, is their description of how it works. This is the Wayans describing how they come across send-up. The one they're doing now is a send-up of all those dance flicks that we have seen recently. They notice trends and things that have passed their time that are at a place where they have become almost parodies of themselves, says producer Alvarez. Damon agrees. They see a trend and act accordingly and think somebody should make fun of that. So essentially what they're doing is exactly what I've been complaining about them doing for ages and ages. Whereas the Airplane movies did something funny, had more gags than you could actually see the first time round. Every gag had another gag behind it. Repetition is a form of comedy. Did all that slapstick stuff really, really well. All the Wayans brothers do is take something which is already well beyond itself by day and go, hey, you know that? That's funny, isn't it? You know those slasher movies? They're funny, aren't they? You know those dance movies? They're funny, aren't they? And their humour, I have to say, has gone exponentially downhill. If you thought Scary Movie wasn't as funny as it should have been, or Scary Movie 2 wasn't as funny as 1 and 3 wasn't as funny as 2, this is a whole other universe of not funny. Summed up once again by a quote from the press notes. This is from Damon Jr., who says, he's talking about why they think they should be doing this now, despite the fact that all the dance movies have been and gone. He's talking about Dancing with the Stars on television, and he says, I mean, Heather Mills, everybody wanted that leg to fly off. I was watching, just hoping, come on, just for once, just let it slide on the floor and turn into a dance move. I'm sorry, At what point is that funny? At what point is that in any way acceptable or funny? So, not funny, not original, not up to the minute, not in any way telling you that something that you already thought wasn't a pastiche of itself isn't a pastiche of itself. Not one single laugh in the whole thing. The entire family should now be refused entry into the movie-making arena anymore until they have promised us never to do this sort of horrible thing again. Although, apparently, there are so many of them that it will take us, you know, for the next 10 years to allow all of them to make a movie. This, I think, is this particular Wayans' first attempt at a feature film, and I certainly hope we never hear from him ever again.
Is it better than Paul Blart?
Yes,
Mall
it is.
Cop?
No, it's no. Paul Blart is better. Paul Blart Mall Cop is better.
But you hated and loathed and detested that with a passion.
I did, but this is so much worse. I mean, it's like at least Paul Blart, there were moments of just boredom, but this was actively annoying from the very beginning. You know, sometimes when you wake up in the morning and you've got a very bad headache that you know that no amount of paracetamol is going to make better? It's like that, and then the day just gets worse.
Mark, the movies to come before 4 o'clock. What?
A whole bunch of other stuff. We're going to do the new Chris Columbus movie. He's the guy who helmed the worst of the Harry Potter movies. We're going to do Beth Cooper, I Love You. We are going to do After School if we get time. Okay. And we're going to do one other. And what else are we going to do? Shorts if we have time.
And plenty of inglorious emails. We'll try and get to as many of them as possible. Simon in Exeter. Hi. Then he does the sign language for Simon Mayo. And Dr. You Big Fire Engine, a reference to...
I heard that. Go, okay. Go, You Big Red Fire Engine.
Overall, I thought Inglourious was good. Not up there with Pulp or Jackie Brown. A bit overlong with some scenes...
A bit overlong.
...seemingly stretch out to appease Tarantino's love of his own voice spoken as dialogue.
Yeah.
But a good movie nevertheless. Brad Pitt was good as the old-style American soldier. But without doubt, the best actor in it was Christoph Waltz's Colonel Hans Landa. He fully deserves his Best Actor Palm d'Or. Dear Doctors and Doctors Receptionists.
I think officially it's the Best Actor Award at Cannes. I think the Palm d'Or is what you call the best film prize. But just to be pernickety.
Will says, Dear Doctor and Doctors Receptionists, the trailer of Inglourious makes the film out to be some sort of moronic shoot-em-up with Brad Pitt's performance at the helm. In reality, the film is driven by excellent performances from the European cast with Christoph Waltz's... Waltz or Waltz?
I think you say Christoph Waltz.
Christoph Waltz is stealing the film, in my opinion. The marketing does this film a disservice, overstating Brad Pitt's role in order to attract people to the film. Tarantino needs to stop splitting films into pithy titled chapters. This film did not require it. But the film surpassed my expectations, as it wasn't the film I expected to see from the trailer. Tom Clark says...
Can I just say very quickly, it reminds me of a comment that Elvis Costello once made about Morrissey, which was he has got into the habit of coming up with a title and then forgetting to write a song to go with it.
Thank you. Tom says, Dear Hans Landa and Aldo the Apache, fight among yourselves. One thing that Mark didn't touch on in his review, Tarantino actually does follow the Kermode dictum that you should use the language the characters are supposed to be speaking in, rather than just use the allo style accent. Better still, this decision is used as a tool to isolate or confuse characters, providing both tension as in the first scene and on one memorable occasion, the biggest laugh of the entire film. In sharp contrast to the gimmicky use of language in films like The Passion, which as we all know was an excuse to beat the fluids out of the lead actor for 2.5 hours. Personally, I felt the film improves over time as you forget most of the lousy bits. By now, all I can remember well are the brilliant scenes that contain either Brad Pitt or Christoph Waltz, and unfortunately, the awful Mike Myers scene. And as another...
Well, the Mike Myers scene is just...
There's a scene with Mike Myers playing a very aristocratic English soldier.
Well, actually playing Mike Myers.
Okay, but with Winston Churchill in the room, who is ignored by both actors, by both soldiers who were there. And as a correspondent was pointing out, why did they do that? Why did they entirely ignore Winston Churchill?
I think because it's a Quentin Tarantino film and he's so enamored of the idea of the joke of having Mike Myers. Incidentally, we should mention Michael Fassbender. I think his performance is really good. I agree that Christoph Waltz absolutely steals the show. I agree with you about the language. I think all those things are in its favour. And I would refer you back again to what I said. I mean, there have been some reviews today. I mean, there's one star in The Guardian. I don't think it's a one-star movie by any means, because I think the thing that's really annoying about it is the fact that there is clearly evidence in it of what a good filmmaker Tarantino could be if he could just be bothered to behave himself and up his game again. And as I've said again, I know I sound like a stuck record, Jackie Brown is the evidence that there is so much more there, and which is the reason why Inglourious is such a letdown, because it's not being made by somebody who doesn't have talent, quite the opposite. It's being made by somebody who does have talent but has just chosen to squander it.
This text says, if England had an attack like Kermode just attacked that film just now, it would all be over. Well, it's not a bad attack on the basis of this afternoon's play. Daniel in Northumberland, Dear Evil Dead and Evil Dead 2.
Can I be Evil Dead 2? You haven't seen either of them, have you?
No.
You really haven't been doing your homework.
I am trembling in anticipation of the doctor's review of I Love You, Beth Cooper. Every single US reviewer has given it a right beating. Mm. It's great to see that the wheel of the great bean counter, Chris Columbus, is finally falling off. I'm hoping for a classic Kermodian rant. Don't let me down. Well, who knows what's coming? Might be interrupted by a wicket or two. Take it away.
Well, I can tell you now, you're not going to get a rant. What you're going to get is just sort of shrugging disappointment, because as you know, I'm not any longer a huge fan of Chris Columbus. I think that he directed the weakest of the Harry Potter movies. The whole series kicked into gear once he got off the director's chair and went into the production chair, which is what he does best. The story of I Love You, Beth Cooper is essentially of a nerdy guy who's been at school all his time doing the valedictorian speech, decides he's going to say the thing which he has never said, which is I Love You, Beth Cooper. Beth Cooper being the homecoming queen cheerleader hottie. She then meets up with him for an evening in which they get involved in all manner of wild and increasingly wacky, blah, blah, zany adventures. Now, two things you need to know. The first one is, the thing started because they got 100 pages of the novel in, and Chris Columbus seems to have liked it enough to have, on the basis of the first 100, on the basis of an unfinished novel, to have said, oh, I want to make that. And boy, does this look like a film that was based on an unfinished novel. Secondly, there's a lovely thing, again, the production notes, in which somebody's quoted as saying, the producer's quoted as saying, you know, Chris, it's a long time since you've been funny. And they then say, yes, so we decided to rectify this by making I Love You, Beth Cooper. Of course, the clear thing is it's still a long time since he's been funny. A couple of sort of nostalgic things for me. Alan Ruck plays the father in it. And, of course, you'll remember in Ferris Bueller's Day Off, there's something really weird about seeing having lived long enough to see the person who was the oiky kid turn into the father now raising the oiky kid. So we have now got, like the Wayans themselves, we have passed generationally in time. So now all the people who I remember as playing young high school kids when I was a kid are now playing dads, and there's something moderately depressing about that. So apart from the fact that it's about the passing of time, and it's not a very original idea, and it was clearly optioned on the basis of a book which wasn't finished, and Chris Columbus hasn't been funny in a long time, not much to say. Can we, however, rope it together with this other film, which is completely stylistically different, which is After School, which is by Antonio Campos, but is similarly about the idea that high school is a time of emotional torment. In fact, you know, Columbus has talked about this. He said the reason that he liked the idea of I Love You, Beth Cooper is it's about the fact that when you're at school, it's a really tormented time, it's a very confusing time, it's a very troublesome time. So on the one hand, his movie in his mind is funny and also a drama. In my mind, it is neither funny nor dramatic. It is also overlong and quite plodding, with two laughs in it, which is more than the Wayans film, so therefore it's not as bad as Dance Flick. So along comes Antonio Campos, who made that very strange little movie, Buy It Now, about a teenager effectively selling her chastity on the internet, which was really creepy and had a really sort of strangely unpleasant docu feel about it, although it was then roped together with a dramatic section. Anyway, he's back again now with a film which owes an awful lot to the works of Michael Haneker, who, of course, you know, does an awful lot about estrangement and the way that video changes everyone's perception of the world. There's a film called Benny's Video, which is always a lot to anyway. The story is, there's an oiky kid at high school. He's doing a video project. He accidentally catches on film the two most popular girls in the school dying of a cocaine overdose. And it's the story about what then happens with his footage when he's supposed to be making a sort of celebratory video about them. And it's very, very creepy. It's very dark. I don't think it's perfect by any means. I think it really has something in it. It does manage to get under the skin of that idea that, you know, high school is a strange and difficult and dark place. Something dramatic has just happened. Do I need to stop?
Well, you don't need to. It was close.
So as I was saying, anyway, dark, twisted, troubling. I mean, the director cites Frederick Wiseman's work as his main inspiration. I think it owes a lot more to, I mean, obviously Gus Van Sant, Elephant. Actually, I think there's quite a similarity there in theme with this and, for example, Twin Peaks. The idea that you have this area with a high school homecoming queen who looks perfect from the outside, but once you delve under the surface, there's something else going on. It's also, if you are like me, somebody who essentially is slightly uneasy about the rise of surveillance culture and the rise of video culture and the rise of YouTubing of everything. It is a film which has something to say about that. I don't think it's...
Yes. And when that wicket fell, Mark, I think you were mid-sentence.
Yeah, so that they can cut this for the podcast, let me continue exactly where I was.
Okay, where were you?
it's perfect by any means, but I do think that it's interesting that what you get is all the stuff which I don't like, which is kind of leaning towards the Larry Clark, is balanced by the stuff which I do like, which is leaning towards Lynch and to some extent towards Elephant. And I think that it is the film of the week, although that doesn't mean I'm entirely happy with it. But I think it's impressive, and there is certainly something in there that's creepy and unpleasant and dark in a way which I admire.
There is
another film to come, incidentally.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, that's kind of reassuring, really. Paul on this, Simon, I saw Inglourious last night, really enjoyed it. As Mark said, a lot of gratuitous Brad Pitt comedy. Best part of the film was Colonel Lander and his duel with Roshana.
It really is. I think that is.
Feel the film could have done without any of Brad Pitt and his mom.
No, I disagree. I like the Brad Pitt character. I know some people have said, you know, what's he doing? What's that stupid voice? Why is it that his character isn't Jewish? Why is it that his character is from Tennessee? Actually, I don't mind Brad Pitt's performance at all. I think he broadly gets it right. I think the problem is not to do with him. I think the problem is to do with the bagginess around everything else. But also, once you're on screen up against the likes of Christoph Waltz, who is so good in it, it makes everybody else look slightly diminished.
And the word that I'd missed out, or not quite understood the significance of until I saw it last night, was the use of the word fantasy. The fact that it's a revenge fantasy.
It is a fantasy. Yes, it is, absolutely.
Means that whatever you think you know,
you don't. Although somebody said, well, that's you giving away the ending. No, it's not me giving away the ending. It's giving away the middle. I mean, it clearly, none of this is happening in the, in inverted commas, real world.
Mark in Barcelona, Humpty and Dumpty, I seem to remember a pledge by the good doctor to quit reviewing if he saw 10 movies this year, worse than was it Blind Wars?
That's right.
With Dance Movie, how close are we getting to losing
the British
treasure that is?
I have just today totted up the total of movies worse than Bride Wars so far, and it's 5.
Yeah, but it's only August.
Yeah, I know.
That's worrying.
I know. So it's and of course, but once you've got through the summer, you can breathe a certain sigh of relief. But there have so far been 5 films worse than that, and Dance Flick is indeed one of them.
109 for 5 Australia. What else is new, Mark?
There's a new film out by Robert Rodriguez, which is called Shorts, which I think for me is probably the kids' film of the week. Story is told in a. It's actually, funnily enough, this kind of relates to Tarantino, because, of course, Rodriguez has worked with Tarantino, but he also has this kind of sideline in doing kids' films. He did the Spy Kids movie. He describes this as being like The Little Rascals, in as much as it's a series of episodic vignettes, all of which tie together in a non-linear fashion to make a narrative which is done by looking forwards, looking backwards, looking forwards, looking backwards. The story is, as a group of kids, a magic rock falls out of the sky. They start to have wishes which can come true and bring anything they want to like, anything they want to life. Meanwhile, they live in a town which is run by a guy who has invented this strange black box which can be anything you want it to be. So it's a, you know, wild, crazy kids' fantasy told in non-linear form. And it's funny because Rodriguez said that the reason he did that was that whenever his kids wanted to show him things on video, and this, funnily enough, relates also to after school, they would show him a scene and go, look, isn't that funny? And they fast forward to another bit. And they go, oh, no, in order to understand that, you have to go backwards to another thing. So it's made by somebody who is very, very conscious of the rapid editing style which his children are completely immersed in. Of course, it is based on an idea, not another one.
Yes, exactly. Here, so we've got 1:03. Where were
if
you?
I can just second that feeling about it sucks. You know what you really should have? Next time you want us to do really well, get me to review the films whilst we're playing, because clearly that is the thing which is causing all the wickets to fall. Every single film review has now been interrupted by a wicket falling.
Well,
so, anyway,
this says just keep Dr. K in the commentary box for the rest of the day,
and it's all
the whole weekend
going swimmingly. So look, okay, Shorts, Robert Rodriguez film, things told out of order, lots of monsters, action, stuff happening, doesn't make much sense, based on an idea by his son who's called Rebel. I'm worried about the fact that anyone's throwing any balls down there at all. And kids flick
bowling,
of the week.
By the
kids
way.
Flip, pardon
not,
me.
Not throwing, it's bowling.
Have they scored any goals since we've
Carry
started?
On.
Fine. Okay, kids flick of the week, and it's perfectly fine. And there we go. And there's really no point in me talking to you, because as soon as I do that, there's going to be more stuff going. So there
That's
we
true.
Go.
Well, we're out of time anyway.
If you enjoyed that, why not visit the Kermode Uncut website at bbc.co.uk/Mark Kermode, where you can find out more about what I think about movies and watch a vodcast of the Mayo Kermode Film of the Week.
Thanks for downloading this BBC Radio 5 Live podcast. And if you like this, you might also like this. Fighting Talk.
I want to know what the greatest winter sport is. Right, a bit of a cold snap in the studio today, actually. Let's just get Mark and Tom out of the way here. Mark?
I think ice hockey is a great sport. We've had it briefly mentioned by Greg. It's really underrated here. Largely because our teams have all got stupid names, like Basingstoke Bison, for
Come
example.
On.
Or Nottingham Panthers.
For details of other Five Live podcasts, go to the website bbc.co.uk/5live or go to the podcast directory in iTunes and search for Five Live.